Mr. Atkins, Reel 3.
Yes, we were required to travel in convoy, and the vehicles were spaced at approximately about 100 to 200 yards between vehicles, and this was the natural action to be taken in case of aircraft attack. We had Bren guns mounted on some vehicles spaced between along the column, but that was all.
What about your arrival at your destination and what happened there?
Well, it was a completely different world, absolutely different to what we'd been living. And we arrived in a place called the Bagouche Box, which is situated between a little place called El Darba and Mirza Matru. There was absolutely nothing there but the Western Desert in all its glory. Although the one good thing about it was very close to the shores of the Mediterranean. So we were able to go and bathe from time to time in the sea.
So the Bagouche Box.
The Bagouche Box. The Bagouche Box. It was called the Bagouche Box because that was the defensive name of that particular area of the Western Desert. It was a defensive position dug and prepared by our units.
So what did you do on arrival there? Start digging in?
Oh, yes, yes. Straight away, all the rifle companies were put to digging and improving the defences. There was a lot of digging, and a lot of people might have the idea, because they refer to the Western Desert, they think it's sand, and it jolly well isn't. It was very, very rock solid. And in many cases, dynamite was used to try and blow one's way into the ground to dig the necessary trenches and fortifications that we were building.
Were you personally engaged on it?
No, I didn't do any digging. Again, I was lucky. I was the MT driver. And at that stage, I'd been promoted to corporal. The reason for that was not through any great expertise on my part, but I had attended a driver and motor mechanics course in Sarafand, of which I qualified, and on the outbreak of war, all units then were moved from a peacetime establishment to a war establishment, and that meant that on coming on to a war establishment, there were many more vacancies for non-commissioned officers of various stages, and of course higher up in the circle officers, and I found myself promoted to corporal and was then given the very onerous task of looking after 5 vehicles of A Company of the 2nd Battalion of the Queen's Royal Regiment in the Western Desert in the Bagouche Box. My task on that for that was to make sure that the vehicles were kept maintained and ready to move at a moment's notice when required.
How long was it before you went into action?
Quite some time. September, and not until December the 7th, I think it was, that the first action was taken by our own forces. And I have to say here that I missed that opening action. The company sergeant major of my company at the time, I've always, and am still convinced, knew something was in the wind, and he said, I think it's time you had some leave, young Atkins, and sent me off on 7 days leave to Cairo. And during that time, that week that I was there, the Western Desert forces moved forward to start the Western Desert exercise against the Italians at Sidi Barani.
You think he deliberately got you out of it?
I'm sure he did. I think I must have been in his good books for some reason or other. And he was a very old, well-loved company sergeant major by the name of Len Wells, and he was a DCM MM from the First World War. he could be a crotchety old devil, but he was quite good.
What did you do in Cairo?
I spent 7 days on leave in Cairo. I don't think I did very much other than go to the cinema or sit in a cafe eating omelettes and chips, or wandering around the streets of Cairo, trying to avoid the Egyptian Falloween, I think they call them, don't they? I think that's the name they give them, who were forever pestering one. They wanted to take you to some place of interest or introduce you to some lady friends, etc., etc. And again, if you remember what I said about my own fear of contacting venereal disease, I kept well away from it. But I have to tell you that my place that I stayed in Cairo was very close to a street very well known to the British soldiers of those days called the Burqa. Like most towns and cities in the Middle East and the Far East, there is always a notorious street that is remembered for those reasons. And temptation was there on several occasions, but somehow or other I fought them off.
Was it out of bounds?
No, it wasn't out of bounds, because it was it was an accepted area. And it was controlled by the medical authorities to a certain extent, but that doesn't mean to say that you couldn't be unfortunate enough to pick a wrong person and land up with VD.
How did you get on with the Egyptian civilians?
I would say not. We didn't like them, and I certainly didn't like them so much as I did the Palestinian Arab. I thought he was a different type of person altogether. I don't know whether I ought to say this, but I thought they were a dirty race. Very unreliable, very crafty. And again, I wonder if I ought to say this because it's going on tape, but I will tell you, we often referred to them as WOGs. Now, I don't know whether you know it, but that stands for Wily Oriental Gentleman. Right, but to the British soldier, of course, who's accustomed to using ribaldry of some form or another, that's how we referred to them quite often, WOGs.
Did you have any conflict with them through theft or anything like that?
There was lots. I think I never experienced any personal, but there was often talk about something had been stolen, clifted, I think they called it, clifty wallers, I think that's what they were called. you had to watch your stuff, because they were not averse to coming and helping themselves to what was not theirs.
Did you make any friends amongst the Egyptian population?
Me, not personally, no, never, no.
Did any of your comrades?
Not to my knowledge, but there may well have been some who did. Again, the British soldier being what he is, some will get very friendly, particularly the female variety, obviously.
What was the Egyptian civilian attitude towards the war? Did they make their feelings felt about that?
I don't really know what their view of the war was, quite honestly. King Farouk was on the throne at the time. He was a source of ridicule, quite honestly, even in those days, before ever he was dethroned. And again, being of the junior ranks, I don't think we were quite aware of what their attitude was as probably some of the politicians and that would be.
So you went back after your 7 days in Cairo.
Yes.
To what?
Well, I went back to the post in the Bagouche box to find that the battalion had disappeared except for a rear party. And we just had to wait then until we were called forward, which was another 2 or 3 days' time when I was called forward to join the company and pick up my company transport. And that was, I wonder if I can remember the place. It was just short of Sidibarani. Can't think of the name for the moment. Anyway, I'll try and think of it and tell you. But when I joined the company, eventually, I picked up my transport and I was driving the company commander, who was a person by the name of Lloyd Owen, who was a Captain Lloyd Owen at the time.
David Lloyd Owen.
David Lloyd Owen, who I think you've met, have you not?
Yes.
Yes. He was my company commander. And I took over the transport from the chap who'd relieved me, and I was pointed in the direction of my PU, pick up this 800-weight vehicle, only to find that there was 2 flat tyres at the back. And my first job was to get that on the road. And by then, the battle for Sidibarani had taken place, and as history will tell you, the Italians were removed in no uncertain manner from the place.
How close to the fighting did you come?
Well, as I say, at that time it had been finished from the Sidibarani point of view. It was then a question of stop-go, all the way up to as far as Bardia. Except for coming under air attack quite often from the Italian Air Force and their shelling from their artillery, from close hand-to-hand combat, nowhere near.
Did you see anything of their prisoners?
Yes, we saw literally thousands of them. it's very difficult to describe, but I remember as we were moving up from Sidibarani and on our way up to Saloum, a place called Saloum. Buk-Buk was the other place I was trying to remember, Buk-Buk. As we were moving up towards Saloum, there was literally thousands of them, and all you could see was a dark smudge, a long dark smudge on the stretching back for many miles, it would appear in the desert. You have to remember, being in the desert, a lot of it was flat and you could see a fair way, but it was just a long procession of literally thousands of them.
What were they like when you got up to them close?
I think, like all prisoners of war, probably the same as we would feel, probably truculent in their manner. What can you say? That's just how they would feel. Despondent, downbeaten, lost, and completely lost. And the Italians, probably more than probably the Germans in the future. They looked a very sad lot, quite honestly. Very sad lot. I think they were badly led.
Did you exchange any words with them?
Not really. I think the odd, it might have been an odd remark, but nothing outstanding that I can remember.
You said that you were pursuing them up to Bardia. What happened then?
Well, as they were bounced out of the Sidibarani positions, and they were doing a withdrawal exercise going all the way back under pressure from our own forces. we sometimes would be the lead battalion keeping in patrol contact with them, with the main party withdrawing. And eventually, Bardia became the next stronghold that they had to be bounced out of. And Bardia, which is on the coast, and is the next stage beyond Saloum and the escarpment, as you proceeded from Sidibarani, you went and you came to Saloum, which is down in the little bay. And then there was a place called Hellfire Pass, but became known to the British Army right up to the end of the Desert Exercises as Hellfire Pass. But you climbed up that pass, and then you got onto an upper plateau. And from there, you came to a place called Fort Capuzzo, another place that the Italians had fortified, but not very great, and was the source of many skirmishes beforehand. And when once you overcame Fort Capuzzo, there was nothing much between that and Bardia. Now, when you got to Bardia, the Italians had developed a very strong defensive position consisting of lots of concrete emplacements, barbed wire, and all the rigmarole that goes with a defensive position. Rather strongly fortified, and I think if it had been defended by people like ourselves, the ordinary British Army, a better account would have been given. back to the story. We advanced on to Bardia, and Captain Lloyd Owen was my company commander at the time, and we were put into a wadi somewhere close to Bardia, on the outskirts of Bardia, and from there the company carried out patrol exercises looking for weak points in their defensive perimeter around Bardia so that it could give the higher command an idea of what opposition they were coming up against. Personally, again, because I was an MT driver, I was never involved in any of those closer contacts with the enemy, doing patrol exercise and things like that. Mine was basically making sure the transport was always there to do whatever it was. That takes us to that stage.
And then what happened?
We stayed in that position for, a week maybe 2 weeks, I don't know, I can't remember. But it was close to Christmas, and I remember we were certainly there for Christmas Day, because I remember our Christmas dinner was hardtack biscuits, a little bit of bully beef, and a pot of apricot jam or marmalade, and you picked that up and went away to your little hole in the ground. There was lots of these little holes in the ground and built up sangers, we called them. That's right, sangers, with some overhead cover here and there and into the rocks for protection from any shell fire that might come our way, or air raids. And we just stayed there until we were eventually relieved by one of the Australian battalions, who were going to come up from the rear and were going to take over the advance. And they were going to be responsible for bouncing the Italians out of Bardia and subsequently on to Tobruk. So we were relieved and we went back down to Buckbuck, as I suppose one could call it a reserve force again.
What were relations like with the Australians?
We got on very well with them. We liked them. It was something new. Our battalion didn't, I don't think, but there were some Australians in Palestine, and there was a lot of upheavals in Palestine between the forces, I think over drink and that sort of thing. But from the close contact that I had with them, they were absolutely marvellous. And they produced some food that we didn't see very often in the British Army. So they were very kind to us. And if ever we had an occasion to go into one of their positions, they were very, very, very good and made you very welcome. And they always used to say, well, do you want a mug of char, Tommy, or Pommy, or do you want some tucker, Pommy, or whatever? And very good. Got on well with them.
Then you went in reserve
at this Buck, and we stayed there in Buck, awaiting whatever the higher authority wanted us to do. In the meantime, the attack went in on Bardia by the Australian forces. We lent some help to them, and it was the first time that I can remember of a casualty. My closest friend by the name of Ted Burgess was killed on one of the attacks. He was a carrier driver then, and they were being used to probe the defences, and he went up on one of the landmines and he was killed. But we stayed in Buck, and it was at that time that we learnt of all the very severe air raids that were going on in England. And there were quite a few of the families, especially those who were London-based, whose families were there, who began to feel very, very concerned. But there was nothing we could do about it. And anyway, eventually, after the Australians had taken Bardia, we were then called forward to take and garrison the port whilst the main force went on to Tobruk. And it's here again that we saw these thousands of Italians being taken as prisoner of war. A sight that, if you've never seen it, is rather awe-inspiring, to say the least. Also by then, by the time we got to Bardia, our motor transport... Oh, I ought to say that before we went up to Bardia, sometime when we withdrew down to Buck from the first expedition to Bardia, I'd been promoted to MT Sergeant. Again, don't ask me why. The MTO must have thought I was the bloke to do it. Very, very young, and I was very, very inexperienced. But all of a sudden, there I was, the MT sergeant, and responsible to the MTO and to help him to keep the battalion transport in working order. But by the time we got there, the transport was almost beyond help. It was literally, literally clapped out.
Which month is this?
This would be about December 1940, wouldn't it? December to January 1940, when this good old transport. Had that transport not been of the standard that was being produced for us, i.e. these Morris vehicles, if there'd have been anything more flimsy, they wouldn't have even got as far as that. So they did us proud, those vehicles, but they did eventually almost give up the ghost. We were able, eventually, when we withdrew finally to the Nile Delta, to get the majority of the transport back there. But it was in a pitiful state. So pitiful was it, in some cases, that we used to go out scavenging for captured enemy transport. And this was dotted about all over the place in the desert. Experienced people, so-called experienced drivers, that would go out and try and bring in some of their lorries. They were mostly diesel, of which we knew precious little about. And we were able to get them going for a while, but eventually they wouldn't last long and they dropped to pieces. But that was the state of our transport by the time we got there. Pitiful, to say the least. So
is the next stage the coming of the Germans into North Africa?
Now, the next stage was this, that with the Australians going on from Bardia to Tobruk, they took over Tobruk eventually when they bounced the Italians out of there. And we did go up close to Tobruk, following up behind them as a sort of a a clearing up unit, trying to sort of sort out the muddles and that sort of thing. And I think one of the reasons we were used as such is, again, because the transport just wouldn't get us forward anyway. It wasn't reliable enough. but we weren't there very long when it was decided to send us back to the Nile Delta. And we went down back to a place called El Tahag in the Nile Delta, somewhere on well outside the Cairo, based near the Sweetwater Canal, so-called. Anything but sweet. And we stayed there as a battalion to basically to rest and to re-equip with transport from the base, whatever we could get. And you have to remember at that time supplies were not very good. And replacement vehicles were not all that easy to get, even so. But we were able to get some. But we'd only been back in that base in El Tahag for 2 or 3 weeks when Rommel appeared on the scene with the German forces in the Western Desert. And as the history will tell you, that he came on the scene and acted very quickly and drove our forces all the way back from El Agheila, right the way back down, almost to Mirza Matru. We were sent forward very quickly, and this is how we managed to get some replacement vehicles from the depot. And we were hastily sent forward to reman the neglected defences of Mirza Matru, because Rommel was coming hell for skelter down the desert with precious little really to stop him. But he was stopped at Saloum, or in that area of the Saloum on the Hellfire Pass on the high plateau. With one place that he didn't manage to take, and that was Tobruk, which held out, and that was being defended by the Australians. So it takes us up to that stage.